What was the moment in high school you knew you were destined to play ball in college?
Yeah, it's funny. I was always one of those people that had like irrational amounts of confidence, you know? So like even before I had really, and shout out to my parents, honestly, because they kind of instilled that in me. They were like, yo, you can do whatever you want to do. So like very early on, like I thought that I could play in the league. I thought I could play. Like I thought college was a given before I even really stepped on the court like that.
How tall were you?
So I was one of those people that actually grew like real steadily. So I was, you know, I was taller. I was on the taller. I remember when I was in eighth grade, I was like 5'10". When I was a freshman in high school, I was like 6'2". When I was a sophomore, I was like 6'5". And then I grew to be like somewhere between 6'7", 6'8". But there was I do remember though, there was a moment because I was good in middle school, and then I got to high school. I broke my leg. I had what's called a tibular avulsion, and it was the summer going into my sophomore year, and I couldn't walk for a long time. Like I couldn't walk for like 5 months. Like they didn't think I played basketball again. They didn't know what, because I was still growing. They didn't know what it was going to be. What happens is like your patellar tendon tears, and then it tears off a piece of your tibia. They had to like screw it down, staple it, all that stuff. But what happened was so I went through that sophomore year, and then like based on basketball recruiting, like your sophomore, like that year in high school is big. Cause like if you're good, you're playing varsity, you are putting up numbers, whatever. And I was like, I was playing varsity, but I was like a shell of myself. Cause I had like tried to rush back to play. So I wasn't really getting any love that way. And I remember we had a tournament in DC after the season when I was starting to get back healthy. It was an AAU tournament called Charlie Weber in DC, and I played in it, and I thought I played pretty well. And at this point, I wasn't getting any love from colleges like that, and I thought I played pretty well. And then I remember getting a note from my high school coach when I got back to school on Monday. It was like, yo, come see me in the office. You get a note like that from your high school coach, and you don't know what you have no idea why and what's going on. So I went over there, and he's like, what did you do this weekend? And I was like, oh, I was over at Charlie Weber. And he was like, my phone has been ringing off the hook. And just based off that weekend, I had like 13 offers, like off that weekend. And so then I was like, oh, like we're here. I might be close to what I always thought I was without having any proof that I was ever that. So that was kind of the moment.
Wow. Okay. And then when you've been in your playing career, second question, who is the toughest opponent you ever faced? Like, who was someone you were like, oh, my gosh, this person is crazy?
Yeah, I mean, so if we're talking about, like, AAU or stuff like that, like, played against lottery picks, KD, like, played against great, great players. In college, though, in a real organized game, there's two people that come to mind, both of which play in the league, but neither one of them are all-stars or anything like that. So the first guy was Mike Scott. He played at UVA.
Oh, at UVA. Yeah.
Mike, he was older. I want to say I was like a sophomore. He was a senior, and he just showed me he had a drive. Like he was skilled. He was skilled at the time, had a good mid-range jumper, made all his free throws.
Lefty? Was he a lefty?
Nah, Mike was right-handed. Mike was right-handed. But he had a motor that I wasn't ready for at that time. He was just relentless, like offensive rebounds, defensive. He was always in attack mode, like always. He was always trying to get a bucket. So that's, and he was strong because he was strong too. So that was one. The other one was Doug McDermott, who plays for the Spurs.
Dougie, yeah.
So he was one of the best college basketball players of all time, and his. And I'm not saying this is why he is worried, because he's a great basketball player and he always was very good. But his dad was the coach too. So he had, when I tell you every play was run for him, I mean like every single play. So there was no rest. Like you knew he was trying to get up a shot every single time. He had a quick release. He shot like 45% from three. He was crafty around the bucket. Yeah, man, those two were tough. They were tough.
You already know. Okay. Who's a player that you played with that for whatever reason it didn't shake out and you were like, man, if only for XYZ, this brother or sister, you know what I mean, would be definitely like L college for sure.
Yeah, this one's tough. And it obviously depends what you mean by make it, right? Because, you know, it's like, did you get to college? Did you get to play some level of pro? Did you make it to the NBA, whatever? The person that comes to mind for me, though, is a guy I played with at Drake named Ravonte Rice. And he played 2 years at Drake, and then he ended up going to Illinois. He was all Big Ten when he was at Illinois. And he's made, I'm sure, a great living overseas playing basketball. But he's played summer leagues, you know, he goes to summer league. I want to say he's put up like 25, 30 in a summer league game. Like he can hoop. He's like 6'4", two guard, super athletic. But it's funny, man. Like the people I think that are borderline, not the incredible athletes with all right. the dimension and all those things, but the people that are borderline, I found that maturity is just maybe the biggest differentiator. Your ability to understand what it takes, you almost have to be ahead of your body, if that makes sense. So your mind and what you know you have to do is almost further along than your physical abilities are, which then enables you to get to that, maximize your potential faster. And right. then for the other people, it's almost as if their mind's like a little bit behind their body, whereby like they can do a lot of things and they're really talented, but they can't, they're not mature enough to put that extra time in the gym, be as consistent as they need to be, not go out on whatever night, study the film, those things that would have put them over the top, they just didn't have it. And I just felt like when he was with us, he was like, he didn't put it all together yet. I think he did when he got to Illinois, but again, back to the point of being borderline,
right?
You don't get a lot of chances, right? Like if you're not the prototypical size, if you didn't go to like the prototypical school, coach, always been a five-star, whatever, you don't get a bunch of chances at this thing. And once you've been labeled as somebody that maybe isn't maximizing themselves, I think it just becomes harder and harder to get to where you're trying to go.
Man, that makes sense. That's good insight. That's good insight, man. I mean, especially with basketball, because there's so few slots. Like it's you know, LeBron's in year 20. Like cats are playing 8, 10, 12 years on the regular. So yeah, that is tough. Okay. Next question. Question number 4. What is the nicest thing a coach has ever done for you?
I've been really fortunate to have some really, really good coaches. Yeah. So, I mean, number one, my pops was my coach for a long, long time. And to the point of instilling confidence and just belief in me, him believing in me and then in turn me believing in myself was probably one of the best things that somebody's ever done for me, period. Beyond that, I would say I had another AAU coach, Levi Franklin. Shout out to Levi. So he was a high school coach in the area, but also he coached our AAU team. And he used to have this saying, and we would always say it to ourselves before we played, is like, we don't duck no wreck. And it was just, it was basically just saying, like, we want all the smoke all the time. Like, wherever it is, we want to go find it. Not only are we not going to avoid it, but we're going to go seek it out. And I think that mentality has just, it's been helpful in all phases of my life. It's like you don't run from adversity. You test yourself in it. You sit with it and you find out what you're really made of. And if, you know, if you are who you think you are, if you are who you said you are, maybe you are, maybe you aren't. And if you aren't, then you know you got to go back to the drawing board and figure it out. And if you are, then there's somebody else that they say is better that you got to go test yourself against again. And so it's just a never-ending cycle. So I would say those are the two.
Shout out to it. All right. So you were super fortunate to play ball after college, right? So everybody knows that tons of people who do really well playing overseas, like basketball at NBA is super tough to get into. You see guys all the time going from Europe to the NBA, back to Europe, or Europe to NBA, stay in the NBA, right? And stuff like this. You got a chance to do that, to play after. Talk me through what it's like playing in Europe, knowing that you probably have, like we talked about a little bit earlier, the skill set to play in the league or have the potential to compete in the league, and how you maintain your confidence and your humility, I guess, through all that, because that's got to be a tough blow.
Yeah, for sure. That's a really good question. You know, it's funny. At the time, I don't know that I realized it this way, but now looking back, I realize how lucky I was and how fortunate I was to get this news. So when my senior year of college, I started off having a really good year. I think I had like 3, 4, 5 double. Like I was averaging like 15 and 12 or something like that. Like I was playing really, really well. And then my knee kind of like gave out on me. I was starting to get, I had to get it drained before games. I was getting cortisone shots. It was just, I was just in a bad place. And then I didn't really know what was wrong until at the end of the season. I found out I didn't have any cartilage in my knee. And so when you don't have any cartilage in your knee, I ended up getting what's called red, exactly, bone on bone. And so I got what's called red flag by the league, whereby nobody will ever touch you. And even the doctors were like, look, you probably shouldn't be playing basketball, period, right now. And if you do, you probably only have a couple of years left. So that was the frame with which I went to go play basketball. It was at that time, it was one of those things that's a little bit crushing because it was your dream. And not to say that I was good enough to play in the league, but it was a dream and you want that opportunity and you want to be able to compete. And so that's tough. But the blessing is that it gave me a chance to think forward and be like, okay, so you're telling me I don't have very long, so what can I do? And I was like, well, I still think I can play pro ball. I want to see the world. So how can I set myself up to be able to do that? And so that was kind of the mental map that I was using. So I signed 1-year deals everywhere that I went because I wanted to see different countries, cultures, et cetera. It's interesting because it's a very interesting dynamic when you go overseas because, you know, you are one of only a couple Americans on a team. You are the highest paid player on the team. Oftentimes, you don't speak the language. A lot of times the team isn't doing, like for me, I never started the season with the team. Again, probably because I thought I was better than I actually was. And I kept turning down deals that I shouldn't have turned down. But I never started with the team. And so I would come in like maybe like a quarter of the way through the season. And if you're coming in a quarter way through the season, it means you're replacing somebody. Things haven't been going well, et cetera. You are away from your family for, you know, 6, 7, 8 months out of the year. You don't have, I think one of the things that they don't talk about a lot is you don't have the same medical attention that you get in college and like everything that's afforded to you in terms of the physical therapists and the ice machines and the STEM and the, you know, the water tank, whatever. Like you just don't have those things. With that said, the ability to get paid to do what you love and to make a good living doing it and see the world while you're at it is something that you can't, it's hard to describe and you can't ever replace.
Right. I want to talk, I didn't know that about your knee. Maybe talk to me, and you spoke to it earlier, right? Like, okay, I knew I didn't have much longer playing. Can you kind of, you know, we're going to jump ahead. We're going to go back, but we're going to jump ahead. Right now, you know, you're in a strategy role at Nike. You're making decisions that, you know, that have short-term, mid-term, long-term consequences. What do you think your experience understanding that, you know, there's a terminal element to your, you know, your playing career, right? Like Jordan, you're not going to be able to play 10 more years of basketball. What impact do you think that decision had in your ability to continue to play and understand, you know, like take advantage of the opportunities you had, has on your ability as like a, you know, strategist now, right? Because that's interesting, right? So often we're not necessarily facing our own mortality in that way. And when we're young, especially when we think we're invincible, double doubles and all that stuff with these different aspirations. So how does that impact, you think, your decision-making process now?
Yeah, it's so real. Honestly, it really is the best thing that's ever happened to me. And I mean that in the realest way. So, and I'll even go back to when I actually broke my leg. Before I broke it, I was a hooper. I was an athlete. Like you couldn't tell me anything else. I didn't really care about anything else. That's what I was going to go do. Full stop. When I broke my leg, I had no choice but to think through like who I am more holistically. I had no choice but to think through, oh, okay, like you need to get your grades together. Like you need to like, seriously, like I was one of those kids that was like smart, but you know, didn't, I was like, this basketball thing's gonna get me where I need to go. So I'm not that worried about it. And so that was like the first time where I had to be like, yo, basketball isn't all that I'm not just an athlete. Like I'm more than that, right? Like it's a part of me. It's what I love to do, but it's not who I am. It's just what I'm doing. And then I think I carried that forward after that. So then I, like, you know, junior, senior year, I did well in school. Similarly, I did well in school and college. And then getting, again, when you get that news again, that like things are actually coming to an end, then you're, I was already kind of in that mind space of like, what's next? Like, what is the next thing, and how do you set yourself up for that? So I was while I was in school, I remember I had graduated early, and I started the MBA program because I was like, can I get a master's in business for free? I later figured out like the prestige that's involved in getting your master's from different places and how different places set you up. So I stopped that to focus on other things. But again, the wheels were turning. When I was playing basketball overseas, I had started the CFA curriculum, Chartered Financial Analyst, because I knew that I wanted to keep my mind sharp, and I thought maybe investment management was something that I was interested in. And even to now, as I think about, you know, what my role is at Nike, and to your point, a lot of my job is to think about 5-10 years down the road and potential right. knock-on effects of things that are happening in the world today, and how that might affect sport, how that might affect Nike as a business, how that might, mm-hmm. you know, generally the population. And so now I've flexed this muscle for myself quite a bit mm-hmm. to be able to have that kind of like chess yeah. mentality, see the board and understand yeah. next moves and how they might affect other things. And that is something that I rely on every day for my job to be able to kind of see around corners, if you will.
For sure. So yeah, going back, I had to jump ahead, my bad. But going back, you're entering your last year, you're playing professional ball. You know the story's already out, right? You know how this book ends, right? What was your mindset? How much did you fight it? Or what does fighting even look like? Am I using the wrong word? What was going on that last year before you moved on?
I mean, we all, even if we think that we know what the end is coming, we're fighting it. Everybody's fighting it. Like, I don't know anybody, you know it's coming, and some people know more than others, but you still like testing a little bit. Yeah. Oh, like, I think I can do this. There were a couple things that helped though. Like, there were a couple of things that like were kind of forcing mechanisms for me. So I've been married to my wife for 7 years now. We went to high school together. At the time that we were on my last year, we had gotten engaged. So like, she was going to school to be an occupational therapist. I didn't want her traveling around the world wasn't going to be a thing, trying to figure out how to do OT. So that was like a forcing mechanism to stop. There was a, you know, just my body. This is where you get to like, are you forcing or not? Man, like when you come in, you're playing with like some vets. And I remember I was in Argentina and I was playing, and it was the most professional organization, like place that I had been around. And you had like real vets that had played on like the Argentinian national team and that were like, no, like this is what I do, and I'm going to show you what it's like to be a pro. And so they're getting their extra work in, whatever. I'm talking about like 30, 31, 32, 33, 34. Year olds getting their work in, all this stuff. And I'm like slumped. I'm 25, I want to say. And I'm like slumped over on the side with like ice bags. And I'm like on the bike, riding the bike. And I'm like, what am I doing? Like, what are we doing right now? And that was kind of the moment for me. And it's funny though, even though I had that moment, I still thought about trying to go back and play another year before business school. Cause I was like, no. Maybe I can finesse one more year. Thankfully, that didn't happen. But yeah, man, like it was a constant battle. And I will say, you learn about preparation in a different way, because when your body's failing you like that, and you're trying to do everything that you can to keep it right, you start to show up way earlier. You start to do right. all the little things that you should always have been doing, but right. just to the point of like maturity versus your body being in a different place. Like, now I'm mature. My body's failed me though. So like, now we're trying to like do the mental thing to catch up. So it taught me a lot about discipline and hard work and all that stuff. But yeah, it was clear physically that, like, you know, when you got the old heads running past you in sprints, like it's not a good look.
Tell me out. Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned that, you know, you obviously, after B school, you go into consulting. And so much about consulting is like, once again, you talked about the muscle you flex as a strategist. It's thinking through all the different permutations and ways in which things could happen and modeling out, or like just brainstorming it through. You being hurt, you know, changed the way you prepared. Do you think, you know, like as an athlete, when you think about preparation, your preparation as an athlete, and you correlate that to your preparation as a professional. What sort of similarities do you see in your mindset and stuff like that to kind of like inspire you to say like, oh yeah, I'm used to thinking this way because that's what I have to do before. Just curious.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm a huge proponent that nothing has prepared me more in life than playing sports. So I think it's pervasive across life, especially when I think about work. I think the first thing, bringing back full circle, I never thought I was going to be a good consultant. Seriously, the things that I do well didn't really lend themselves to heavy data analysis and synthesis and that sort of thing. But going back to the whole, like, not ducking smoke, like, thing, like, I was, my point of view was, I know, back to the thinking a couple steps ahead, I know when you look at my resume and you talk to me, I know what your question is. Your question is, does he have the analytical horsepower to do whatever it is that I need him to do? I know he can talk to people. I know he can probably lead people. And I know he's probably a really hard worker. But what I don't know is that if I needed to do something more complex, does this person have the horsepower to keep up? And so in my mind, I was like, where are the high horsepower people? Where are the people that are doing this analysis and how can I find that? That's how I got to consulting in the first place. And then within consulting, again, back to the, I'm not trying to duck smoke. I was like, where is the most rigorous part in this company? Like, where do I find that? It turns out that for a lot of folks, that's their private equity practice where you do a lot of due diligences. And it's very fast paced with very sharp people because you're working with buy side private equity folks. You're also working with very senior folks on the consulting side. And then you're working with portfolio companies of like real operators that have done real work. And so that's really rigorous. And again, it was like approving yourself. And then to your point about what this preparation looks like and kind of how I transferred, I was like, there were little things that I did that I thought helped me be successful. For instance, there's a bunch of folks that would show up to the client site on Monday morning. I did not do that. I would show up on Sunday night because I knew that I needed to be in that place, settled, get my night's sleep, wake up early. Even if it meant an extra night away from my family, I was like, I need this time to like, it's no different than showing up to class like 15 minutes before class starts versus just showing it right when it walks in. Like you feel and you're prepared to work in a different manner. That's one of the things tangibly on preparation. I know for me, to the point of like transferable skills, I was just ready to work at a capacity that I think a lot of people weren't ready to work at because I had seen it before. Like I knew what it was like to be super, super exhausted, to be mentally and physically drained and trying to fight through. And so like the 16, 17, 18 hour day, like they just, of course, they wear on anybody. But I knew that like it's one of those like sicko things where you're like, I know you're feeling it really bad. It gives me a little bit extra juice to go do whatever it is that I need to do. Those are just a couple examples, man. But there's tons of either transferable skills or like ways in which preparation that I learned from sports have played a huge role in consulting and beyond.
Exactly. So you know, you've played at a high level. You play professional basketball. You're done. You start to go into the deep end, explore, all right, how do I build up my technical acumen? When you're building up this technical acumen, recognize it's a different muscle. It's the same, you know, different version of the same idea, whatever we want to call it. Talk to me a little bit how you started to orient yourself to what feels like, you know, a huge mountain to climb as far as building up your technical acumen, right? So you mentioned it earlier. For sure. I think most people who play sports, they've got the soft skills, right? Like you can probably lead. You can probably work well in a team environment. You would probably work well in a team environment better than most, right? All the soft skills are more or less kind of sorted and built into you, you know, being able to participate in a team in a meaningful way. From the technical skill side, talk to me about how you had to adjust your mindset, if at all, or was there ever like a moment you're like, man, it's not like I can just run. Like, you know, you play basketball. It's like you can miss a couple shots and then now all of a sudden you can make when you feel good, right? The feedback loop is different. Talk to me about like your mindset, building that technical acumen.
Yeah, for sure. I would say the first thing baseline is that I think we often start with what we don't know And instead, we need to start with what we do know, right? And as athletes, what we do know is we know what it's like to try to be great at something and to perfect something. We know what it's like to do mundane, repetitive tasks over and over and over, like that little footwork, like you backpedaling as a DB, like you just do little footwork drills every day after practice. You got to do it over and over and over again until you get it right. So we know that. And I think we often forget that we know, and that is not a sports thing. That is a life thing. And so I think we often forget and don't give ourselves enough credit for that. So that's baseline. I would say the first thing that I will say for myself is that I was fortunate in that I grew up in a family. My older brother went to an Ivy League school. He is a lawyer. Like, I saw what the blueprint looked like. Like, my parents talked to me about business things, like, early. Like, so, like, I was fortunate that I wasn't coming from, like, ground zero with a lot of these things. So I'll lay that out there, too, because it matters. What I will say, though, is I think that the biggest unlock for me is that when you're in business school or when you're in these consulting or investment banking or these other like kind of like boot campish type environments, it's easy to get overwhelmed by the verbiage and the way in which people go about things that like make you think that it's more complex than what it really is. When in reality, what all that's happening is that you're now around people that have been living this for years, have been talking about this at the dinner table for years, have been doing internships longer than you have like they just have more experience across the board. And I think what that does for a lot of people is it makes you question your intelligence, but it has nothing to do with your intelligence. It's just an exposure thing.
Right.
And so then once you can understand that, like, hey, look, I am actually just as smart as this person, if not smarter. I just haven't seen this thing in the same way as many times as they have. Then you start to give yourself this grace when it comes to learning. And then you apply what you already know, which is you already know how to be great at things. So then that speeds up the process a little bit faster than maybe you thought you could get there once you've given yourself the grace. And I think once you put those things together, then you're cooking with gas, and then you start to run, and then you're like, oh, wait a second, like I'm running kind of fast. I'm faster than Johnny. Like I'm faster than Rachel. Like I got it. And I think once that confidence builds, it starts to snowball, and you can do great things.
Exactly. You're 20, 22, 21. Whenever you came out of Drake, what's one thing you thought about the business world that you got wrong that you know now? Like, what's one thing you thought about? Like, because you knew your career, you might not be able to last, you know, 10 years or whatever playing because of the knee. So you had to be thinking about business. What was an assumption you made that was wrong that you think if you knew better, maybe you could have, once again, we talk about shortening the distance, right? Like reducing that curve, that learning curve, a success curve, whatever you want to call it, that would have helped you.
Man, that is a great question. I think I thought a couple of things that I know I was wrong about. I think the first thing that comes to mind is that I don't think I fully appreciated the value in people that will take the time to show you where the stones lie so that you can walk on water. Like I don't think I fully appreciated how important it is to have people in the work environment that you're in, outside of the work environment, that can help guide and navigate your life because they've been through certain things. I don't think that maybe this is gift and the curse of the athlete piece. Like I always thought I could figure it all out, right? Like I was just always kind of like, I got this. Like you, like, and I even saw it as a sign of weakness to ask some of those questions. When now I realize that it's very much a sign of strength, one, and two, you don't get to where you're trying to go without these people. Like you can't. It could, because again, like you'll figure it out a little bit too late and you'll miss that window by like just a little bit, and that's all it takes. And so I underestimated how much it takes a village, one, for sure. And then two, to the point of once you have the village, I think I always thought that showing understanding was what people wanted to see. So like I always led with confidence and like, again, I got this. And I thought that that's what people, and I think that does hold to a certain extent, but I think I wish I had known more to ask the next question and the next question and really just be like hungry for like tapping into that knowledge and not worrying about what you may or may not think of me and my own abilities and my comprehension of what's going on, but rather, no, I don't care what you think. I'm just trying to soak up every ounce of knowledge that you have so that I can use it for myself and spread it to others. So I think those are probably the two things that I just like.
Man, I love
that. I underestimated hugely.
Man, I love that. I love that. So right now you're at Nike, 1 million people. That was the biggest understatement of this whole pod, this whole episode. Everybody in the world knows what Nike is. You're an athlete working at Nike. What is your job, first off? And two, if you can give us a high, super like 50,000 feet, like overview of like what Nike means as a business, like what elements are. You don't have to dig into each and every one of them, but what are the components? Because I think, you know, everybody's wearing Nikes. But when we think about Nike as a business, I think people think like, oh, well, yeah, like you sell shoes, right? But there's so much more to that. Maybe just break that down for us, if you don't mind.
Yeah, for sure. So I am a director on our enterprise strategy team. And what our enterprise strategy team is, it's a lot of former strategy consultants. And what we do is, among other things, but the main thing is to kind of think 5-10 years down the road, big, bold growth projects, many of which are coming from our chief strategy officer or our CEO to figure out and give an unbiased opinion on. So that's the job. I would say as far as what Nike is, again, I didn't take all of this in. Nike is a fascinating place because it is so multidimensional. And I think this is a lot of what you were just getting at. Nike is a sports company, right? Nike is also a culture company. Nike is also an innovation company. Nike is also a fashion company. Nike is also a storytelling company, right? And so when you walk into the walls at Nike, and even it's fascinating. You and I know you were there, but like from building to building, it's a different vibe,
right?
Because you have this corporate $50 billion company piece of Nike that exists. And even that is like less corporate than a lot of places. At most, it's a polo shirt and some running shoes. But then you go into the Serena Williams building and you have like all the designers that are in all the flyest stuff. Travis Scott, this, you know, name your Jay Blavin partnership. Yep. This, like name your collab. And they all like are under the same roof, right? It's a retail company. Like, so like, no matter what your flavor is, it feels as though you can find a place and a space for you to be and enjoy what it is that you want to do. And I think that's one of the coolest things about Nike is that, to your point, it really is so many different things to so many different people.
I love that. Man, amazing story. Love rapping with you. If someone's looking for you, if they're trying to reach out to you, they've got a question, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Yeah, for sure. I really do try my best because, again, I know so many people have helped me along the way. So best way is LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn.
Well, what's the best way to get you? Because, you know, everybody gets tons of LinkedIn messages. What's like the best way for them to communicate with you? Like, what would it need to look like for them to be able to say like, oh, shoot, let me go follow up. Let me go follow up with them.
Honestly, I'm pretty simple, man. I'm serious. Like, I really am. Like, I will talk to you about absolute bullshit in 30 minutes because I know people did that for me because I know at times I didn't know what I was doing. I was just reaching out to folks. I would say if you really want to get a response from me, have a clear ask of what you need from me and whatever correspondence you send, LinkedIn is my ideal. But whatever it is, if you have a clear ask for me of and a clear understanding of how I can help. So it's not just like, hey, can we talk for 30 minutes? It is, I'm trying to do X, you have experience in Y, can we talk about how I potentially bridge that gap to set me up in the position that I want to be in. Cool. I know exactly what we're talking about. Happy to do it. Know I can add value, because that's the other thing. It's like, what I don't want to do is, while I'm happy to just chat with you, I don't want to waste your time and not add any value to your life. So I think that's it. You have a clear ask, we can hop on the phone.
Sincerely. All right, man. Is there anything you got on the horizon we should be looking out for? If not, what's like the thing you're most proud of that happened recently?
Man, we got some cool stuff cooking up at Nike. I would say there's two things. One I think there's a few things. I think one, we have an elite youth basketball league. I think people just saw we're starting to do a high school scholastic deal in addition to AAU. I think that's really cool. Something that has been worked on and thought a lot about, and a partnership with the NBA is something I think you'll see some cool things coming out on that front, which is really cool. I think we got a fitness studio coming to Austin. So check that out. We already got one in California, but we got another one coming to Austin, because we're getting into the fitness, the boutique fitness space. So that'll be in a Nike only way. So that'll be dope. And then I think the other thing, which you won't hear about as much, but I really do hope that you will feel, is at Nike we have been in a continual battle in the running space, and we just did a lot of work on our running strategy to try to shore up our position in there. And so I think you'll start to see, we're going to come out with a new anthem. We're going to have more boots on the ground and things like that. And so we'll be in more like running stores, stuff like that. So I'm really excited about all those things. And I think that's, again, one of the cool things about Nike is like, you work on these things and you can see them out in the open, and you can see like how many people got on Hokas, or how many people got on Brooks, or how many people got on, you know, the new Nike Vomeros, and you can start keeping track that way. So those are just a few things that I'm super proud of and coming out soon.
I love it. Man, Joy, appreciate you so much, brother. Learned so much. I didn't even know some of this stuff, so it's always good to rap. Have a go. I hear the dog barking. I think that might be the calling card right there. That might be the sim in the back.
That's how you know it's time to shut it down. Before I do, though, man, I just want to say, one, really appreciate you having me. Two, I love what you are doing in this space. I think you do it in a super, there's no one more authentic than yourself in the way you've been able to maneuver between sports and business and like the playing days and then after the playing and that career. Like, so you doing it, and it helps, I think, so many people, because I think so many people are trying to figure this out for themselves and are trying to sort it through. And again, a lot of folks don't have people that they can look up to and rely on. And the more people they can hear and they can feel like they can touch and reach out to, I think the better off we'll be. So I just want to give you your flowers. I know it. Yeah, I just want to make sure. We don't give people enough flowers, and I want to make sure you got yours.
Man, I appreciate it. Well, all right, brother. I'll check in with you. Thank you so much. And Jordan in the building. Talk to you later.